Okay, well, I'll just
tell us who you are and where you're from and what you're doing and what's happening.
Yes, I'll just start with some preliminary stuff here while people are joining up. First of all, I need to ask, my name is Joe Lello, and I'm sure you all have seen my post on Barry's forums. I need to ask a favor of all of you. I've had a very strange problem with my voice. I'm going to have to consciously make an effort to try to talk softly here. My voice has been coming and going inexplicably, and I start talking like a little old man like that. So if all of you could focus some energy on my fifth chakra here and try to pump some more stamina into my voice, it would be greatly appreciated. I'm going to try to talk kind of like this to hold it down.
Good idea, Joe. Realize that I can boost your volume here from the control panel.
Okay, it may come to that.
So you don't need to talk loudly, Joe.
Okay.
You can talk enthusiastically, but just not loudly.
Enthusiastically, I definitely am.
I saw lots of posts that made reference to Joe Lello in hushed tones. And I went, who is this Joe Lello? So I tried to get hold of Joe Lello for months. We had a couple of conversations, and one thing that you probably notice as Joe talks, or you might not notice once you get into a full rave, that Joe is a bit of a humble character. And I've noticed an enormous amount of the Almost producers, possibly with the exception of Sig Virta, who's also a very humble fellow, but he's a fairly articulate speaker and has got a lot to say. And most of the Almost community are incredibly nice people. It's been my great joy to have instituted these calls and to do them all the time, because I get to have fulfilled the reason why I even started doing them, which is to listen to some of the more alchemic, savvy individuals, and Joe is definitely one of them. So what I'd like to do is start with welcoming you, Joe, and thank you for being on the call with us. One thing you were going to say was how you got into this whole thing in the first place. And it sounded pretty interesting when I asked that. So why don't you tell the group how you actually stumbled onto the whole alchemic Almost world?
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. Actually, it was a bit nefarious here. I don't even know if Barry knows the history of this. But I was engaged in an email back and forth with some people regarding some Egyptian pictures of the old Egyptian hieroglyphics, and someone had sent me a particular picture which I looked at, and being a computer, I hesitate to use the word hacker, but an old computer techie from way back, I took a look at the source of the picture, and I said, well, if this picture was there, there may be something else interesting, so I decided to go looking what else might be there on this particular server. And it was not protected by any passwords or anything, so I didn't really break any laws. But I wasn't exactly invited, so I went poking around, and here I come across the David Hudson seminar. The initial one, has the Philosopher's Stone been found? And you know, I'm sure you're all familiar with that. And just a wealth of information, which, long story short, wound up, I believe, being Barry's stash of information that at the time was being kept on that computer. And I'm reading this, and I'm just floored. I didn't know what to make of it, and I didn't know what I'd stumbled on. I didn't really know how to deal with it, but I was absolutely fascinated, and I sat there for literally 4 days reading this information. And then I found myself in a bit of a quandary. I was fascinated by it, wanted to be involved in it, but how do you approach someone who you have just clandestinely obtained their information? Hi, I was hacking your computer the other day, and I'd like to discuss this further. So I didn't really know how to go about it. I just decided, what the heck, I'm going to call Barry here. He was mentioned quite often in all this information, and he seemed to be the head of this. And so I called Barry up, and I suppose at this time, even though it was just being made public not too long ago, he was 100% open to discussing it and didn't couldn't care less that I had found out about it, and it was, you know, a huge weight had been lifted off me. We didn't even broach the subject, and he was just totally receptive and forthcoming with all kinds of information, and I was greatly relieved.
Yeah, he's like that.
Barry's kind of like that, yeah. And so we got to talking about it, and I had decided to start working on this stuff myself, and the only thing I had any reference to was at the time his, I think he was calling it red-purple precipitate or something, was his initial method of dissolving gold with acid and peroxide and making a red-purple precipitate. So I decided to start poking around with that, and I was having a little difficulty, so I asked him, who could I speak to about this, or, and then Don Nance's name came up, and I missed something here. I had also told Barry that I had a computer. Being a computer person, I had an extra computer laying around that I had put together from spare parts, and I said, Barry, I want to try to contribute to this movement. I said, this is fantastic stuff. What, you know, it's something that I can do. I have a computer here. I'd like to donate it to the cause. And Barry, being a totally selfless person that he is, says, well, I don't need one. My computer's fine. But I do know someone that needs one badly, and that's this guy named Don Nance. Just told me that his computer died or something along those lines, and why don't you give him a call? So I dialed up Don, and we had a conversation, and I sent him the computer, and he proceeded to start helping me over the phone with my experiments. And not long after that, we broached the subject of his possibly coming up for a visit, which he did wind up doing, and showed up on my doorstep not too much longer.
Where was your doorstep at that time?
You're breaking up. What was my... Oh, my doorstep at that time was in Pennsylvania. I was living on a large piece of property in Pennsylvania, and I had extra buildings. I had a little cottage, and I had an extra room and so forth. And as luck would have it, Don's living situation was not the greatest, and he was trying to get out of there and find a place to go. And so I said, well, you know, you're welcome to come up here and spend a little bit of time, and maybe we can exchange ideas, and you'll have a place to stay until you can get yourself together or whatever. And it just seemed like a fortunate accident, but that incident right there was the turning point for my change in perception of how the universe operates, and I'll go into that a little bit later. But long story short, Don showed up on my doorstep and wound up staying with me for several months, and gave me an apprenticeship in all the basics. I had started with pretty much what winds up being the most complicated process, and Don backpedaled, and we went back to square one and went through all of the wet method and the dry method and, you know, the regular process of how to do all the different things, some of which I knew, some of which I did not, and we both worked these things out very well. So that's how I got a start in this. And let's see, where can I go from there? Don was actually the one that encouraged me to basically go into distribution of it. I was learning this just for my own self-edification. And Don says, well, we need more alchemists. There's not enough people here. And that's something I hear all the time. People ask me, why do you tell people how to make your stuff? You're putting yourself out of business. And what a lot of people don't realize is that if even 1% of the potential people that could become customers for this material ever placed an order at the same time, we would all be so overwhelmed we wouldn't possibly know where to start. It's no problem with me at all to educate other people in how to make this stuff. I tell everybody that I meet that's interested that will listen how to do this. I've had a standing invitation since, I think, 2001, that anybody that wishes to is welcome to come to my house, and I will actually do a sodium burn with them and explain how to do it or any of the other procedures. Unfortunately, only two people have ever taken me up on that offer. I don't know why, but it's pretty dangerous stuff to work with, so it's understandable. But that still holds, by the way, if anyone wants to know, and that's something that really should be told firsthand. It's a very, very dangerous routine. But that's why I have no problem passing this on. I don't really consider this a business. I mean, of course, we make some money doing this, but not a great amount. I don't think I've actually shown a profit yet compared to all of the equipment I've had to purchase and certainly the time invested. It all comes out in the end, though. Some of the materials are very, very simple to make. Others are incredibly involved, and we could never touch close to the price that it should be charged for it. Nobody would ever buy it, so it kind of all works out in the wash. We get to make a little extra on the easy stuff, and we take a bath on the expensive stuff. But the most important thing is it gets out there, and people are waking up more and more, which is the goal, of course. Let's see. I've had we started with where I started with this, and then after a while, I guess Don then went back to where he is more or less from, or been hanging around in the south down there. He didn't like the cold weather, and I don't blame him. That's why I'm out in Arizona now. So he went back down there somewhere around Virginia or something, and when the cold weather came, not too long after that, I packed up and came out here to Arizona for pretty much the same
reason. The hottest town in the U.S., apparently.
This is basically the surface of the sun out here. I understand how they did the processes back there in the Egyptian desert, because this is very much like that. You try to do an evaporation in Pennsylvania, and you're sitting there for days waiting for something to happen. You set something out here, and hours later, the dish is dry. It's unbelievable. I've never seen such a hot place. You can literally fry an egg on the sidewalk. It's not a joke. But lends itself well for evaporations, absolutely. I guess I must be doing something right, because I definitely have received quite a bit of feedback from people. One thing I want to mention that I'm somewhat proud of is that I have actually received orders from places all over the world. I guess, of course, the Internet makes the world a lot smaller place, but I've shipped to countries all over the world, including many from Iraq, from soldiers on active duty, and I have yet to charge a nickel for anything that I've sent over there. I've had people pay me, and I've had to refund their money because they wouldn't accept the gift, and I said, no, you're gonna get it for free, and here's three bottles, not one, because it's the least I can do for these people over there who are risking their lives for us to be able to sit here and do what we're doing in safety. And just did that again last month. My site has been mirrored in several different countries. I think it's mirrored in France. I know it's mirrored in Austria. It was in Italy. And I guess I kind of realized that I must have been doing something right when I received this particular email, which I'll just read to you. It's real short. Hi, Joe. Good to hear from you. Heard about the work conducted when these two individuals visited you recently. It seems as a result they're now preparing to distribute M-State in a base here in England. I've been keeping abreast of Ormus research since first meeting David Hudson in 1995, hence my current book, Lost Secrets of the Sacred Ark, which is now in production as a Hollywood movie. Currently, I'm revising all my website pages, and the new ones will go live in a couple of weeks. In this regard, I'll be glad to add Atlantis Alchemy to my white powdered gold page. All the best, Lawrence Gardner. Which kind of floored me when I received that. I don't know many celebrities, but I guess I can claim that I know one now. So, thank you very much, Lawrence.
Big kind of celebrity to know in the Ormus deal.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he's pretty well known in these circles, huh?
Okay, Joe, carry on.
Okay, well, while I'm here on this page, I guess I could read you a few more that I've gotten back. most of the ones I get are fairly simple feedback from people. I came across your site looking for Copper Ormus. However, I wound up getting the Kemra and the Sea of Joy. I finished the Kemra, and now I'm starting on the Sea of Joy, and both seem to greatly deepen my focus while meditating, and the dream activity is just outrageous. You'll be hearing from me again with another order. Thanks. And the Atlantis Alchemy products that I've been taking are helping my energy and consciousness levels. I'm consciously more aware of my energetic self, and my body is healing from these products. My legs feel as strong again as when I was a young man, for instance. That's pretty much the type of things that I read, that I receive, rather. I really like when I hear things like this. Thank you for your thoughts on my son. He's doing well on the Ormus. All in all, he's greatly improved. I dread to think what his symptoms would be like without it. Thank you again. I hope you're doing well and showered with blessings daily. And both of my grandfathers are having a lot of health troubles now. One has cancer and the other is just, well, they're both over age 90. At first, they didn't want to hear about my, quote, New Age nonsense, but when his bottle started getting empty, Grandpa Number One, my dad's dad, said, hey, you know, we need to order more of this stuff. It's almost gone. And this is from a man who wouldn't even take a vitamin pill his whole life. Thanks for doing what you do. And, of course, probably the very most satisfying is when I hear something like when the doctor, when we told the doctor we're not going to take any radiation treatments, that we're going to try an alternative, I was lectured very much by this doctor, especially after my son left the room. I'm just telling you what he said. Most of these specialists have an attitude that make you feel like you're harming your child and give you the guilty feeling that if he were to die, it would be your fault. After 2 weeks of taking the elixir, M3 is what they're talking about here, the MRI indicated that the tumor has shrunk at least another 3 millimeters, and there's no sign of any more growth, so that's great. Thank you, Joe. And that kind of stuff is really good. Recently, very recently, one of my newer customers told me that he gave a bottle of manna to a friend who was in end-stage cancer, and the man regularly makes a drive down to, I think it was San Diego from somewhere in North California, and generally so tired by the time he gets there that he can barely crawl out of his car and crash in a motel room. And after just a short while of using the manna, he was actually able to get there and go in a restaurant, have a cup of coffee or something, and actually do something in life. And, you know, it's not much to party when you're young, but when you're old and very sick, every minute you get to enjoy your life is just that much more valuable. So that really, really was heartening to hear that. And another guy, the last one here, I don't want to sit here and read all day, is I explained how to make it to this particular person, and he said, I know that the method you gave me will help get me off of these painkillers, which are killing my mind as well as my body. I've never done drugs or drank or anything in my life, so they scare the heck out of me to take them. I want you to understand that what you gave me is something I can never give back, but I thank you truly. I don't know what to offer you, but if there's anything I can ever do, let me know. At this point, all I have left is time. So that's the nature of the messages that I hear back from people, so I figure I must be doing something right, and I intend to carry on as long as I can stir a beaker.
What's really interesting, Joe, is that I have this contention that I've arrived at in the last few months, and I just keep coming back to it. So one of my contentions is that not just that Ormus is uplifting, but when a person is uplifted by Ormus and then they make another lot, that Ormus is even stronger. And that stronger Ormus is going to uplift them even more. And then they're going to make some more Ormus that will even be stronger than that.
What you would call a synergistic reaction, I think, absolutely. The person is very much a part of the process when it comes to making Ormus. You've got to you put yourself into the product whether you realize it or not, and that's why I never like to make a batch of this when I'm, you know, if I've just had an argument with the girlfriend or I'm feeling poorly and just not up to snuff, I'll delay an order. I like to get stuff out the door as soon as I can. I make everything to order. I don't keep anything in stock at all. Rarely will I keep a bottle more than 2 or 3 days. I'll give it away before I store it. I make everything fresh on order. And I'll have to just put it off before I'll make it when I'm in a bad state of mind, because there are people who can actually sense that kind of energy. It gets imprinted on the elixir when you make it. And people don't believe this, but it's absolutely true. And I know people that could actually, if you gave them 2 bottles of manna and said this one was made by person A and this one was made by person B, they could actually tell you which one is which. I wish I had that ability. I'm not quite that good, but they can actually do that. It's a very real phenomenon. So you don't want to be making this when you're in a negative state of mind. I try to pretty well clear my mind completely, nothing positive or negative. But just try to be completely into what I'm doing, and if I'm thinking of anything, it's I want this to come out as potent and as pure as it can be, and that's pretty much all I focus on when I'm making it. If a particular person that I know is taking it because they're sick with some particular disease, I may focus on that and try to put that intent into it. And I know it works. And that brings me around to probably the main point that I want to cover, and that is what I hear from people more often than anything else in regard to this is, I don't feel anything when I take it. Probably the biggest hurdle for people when they get involved with Ormus is it's different from any other type of material. It's not a drug like a tranquilizer or a sleeping pill or an energy booster in that respect, like caffeine. They're so attuned to taking something and 10 or 20 minutes later feeling a physical effect from it that they assume that's what Ormus is going to do. And, you know, there are a few people who are very, very sensitive and do feel some immediate effects from it, but believe me, it's not like that. It doesn't work that way. What this material specifically does is to support the mechanism of the universe. Our universe that we live in is actually a mechanism. It's a machine. It is designed to take our thoughts and the things that we focus on mentally and turn them into 3D reality. And I'm sure most of you know that to some degree. And basically what Ormus does is simply accelerate that process. It's been said by many, many people that are of this persuasion that the next stage in human evolution, the next dimension that we're going to proceed to, is precisely that. The thoughts that we have manifest, and that's a word that's been thrown around a lot, but manifest instantaneously. And that's the next step in human evolution, and that's precisely what Ormus does. It accelerates the manifestation, and I give you the example that I just explained. I got involved with making this material from Barry's instructions, and I had nothing in mind but a pure intent to want to learn more. And it wasn't even a conscious effort on my part to think about this because I was totally absorbed in it already. I didn't have to stop and think, I want this to happen. It was just all I was focusing on was learning. I want to learn how to do this, everything about it. I want to learn how to do it the best I can. And lo and behold, I manifested an alchemist on my doorstep. And that's the way I look at it, and that's exactly what happened. And that's what you need to do. You need to change your entire mindset over to that type of thinking, and then you will begin to see Ormus working. That is what it does. I can give you so many examples of that, and what is on my website that I've put on my guidance page is a quote that I like to use, and that's the Peruvian shamans have said, anytime a person makes the conscious decision to follow a spiritual path, the universe actively conspires to assist them. And that's very, very true. And if you start looking at things in the matter of, this happened for a reason. What is that reason? Instead of why do these things keep happening to me, you will develop an entirely different view of the world, and your life will become much, much simpler. It may not be your route in life to have a simple life, but I have a feeling I'm forgetting something that I wanted to say here.
Joe, I
catch my breath here. Anybody have anything?
Joe, this is Barry. I've noticed what you said about manifestation. That seems to be one of the most profound effects of this stuff. And I also want to chime in about how you said many people do not feel it. I didn't really feel much of anything for several years. And then I just noticed that in comparison that I was feeling a lot better than I was 5 years ago, you know? And
right.
The back problems that I had were gone, and joint problems were gone, and different other things, you know, as well. But they're subtle.
Absolutely. When you take this stuff constantly, regularly, day after day, you'll forget what a doctor is. I cannot literally remember. I think it was 13 years ago was the last time I set foot in a doctor's office for for something other than an injury, getting stitched up, a cut or something, an x-ray to make sure I didn't break a bone when I fell off the ladder or something of that nature. As far as a sickness, forget about it. And before that, and it was probably 10 years. It's just not, being sick is not a part of my life, and I don't think it will be ever again. That's another absolute solid thing that this does, is boost your immune system up to its maximum potential. And in the sea of toxins and pathogens that we live in, that's quite an important thing. One interesting aside that one person was making use of this material that I hadn't really heard of previously. A salon, one of these places that women go to pamper themselves. This person was actually using it for a body wrap and wrapping people in white gold with this, you know, like a mud bath kind of deal. And they bought a gallon of Ormus material, and they were actually wrapping people up and soaking them in Ormus precipitate, which I thought was pretty neat.
Did you hear of any results from that?
I didn't have a whole lot of communication with that person. She was very busy. She owned like 3 or 4 salons, and I didn't really hear back from her. But she apparently had been doing it for a while with another provider, so it must have been working fine. A couple of books that I just want to throw out, again, are on my site, but I feel it's important to mention with the changes that the world is going through right now, that you really everybody needs to read. One is called The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life, which deals with sacred geometry. It's a 2-volume book by Drunvalo Melchizedek, and I'm just throwing that at you, and I won't bother to spell it because it's on my site. If you go to my site and go to the guidance page, AtlantisAlchemy.com, and go to the guidance page, there's actually a link there to Amazon for that book. And another one is Power Versus Force by David Hawkins, which is a very, very critically important work for the first time.
It's a must-have book.
I'm sorry?
It's a must-have book.
Absolutely.
If you're going to be interested in the field of consciousness, Power Versus Force is a must-have book.
But even if, you know, for nothing else other than the one item that's in there, and that is kinesiology. David Hawkins was the person who researched and perfected, if you will, kinesiology. For 20 years, this guy is a Harvard medical professor. This is not some off-the-wall guy that doesn't know what he's talking about. This is a Harvard-educated medical person who studied for over 20 years with groups of people kinesiology, muscle testing, for those of you that don't know what it is. For the first time in history, we have a method that anybody anywhere can use at any time to verify the veracity of anything. Whenever any event occurs in the universe, the vibration of that event is indelibly etched into a record, which people refer to as the Akashic Records. Suffice it to say that a record of everything that ever happens exists. And it is possible to access that through kinesiology. And he explains in the book how to do that, how it works, and all the research that he did. And it's just an amazing tool that everyone should know how to use. There's no reason to ever be duped again by any politician, by any doctor, by anybody that's trying to sell you a bill of goods, because you have a means of testing the veracity of what they're trying to tell you by using this simple method. Another woman who is very knowledgeable about this is Michelle Smallwright, who wrote a book called Soilless Gardens, which has to do with kinesiology. She's a person that runs a greenhouse, more or less, but it also applies to many other areas. And that's another one that's worth reading, Soilless Gardens, Michelle Smallwright. Anything else you want to throw in there at this point, Dennis?
No, mate. I'm fully entertained.
Okay, one thing I want to mention that you wanted me to go over was my white gold policy. If you'll notice on my website.
But Barry wants to ask a question.
Oh, go ahead, Barry. Speak a little bit louder, please, sir.
Yes, are you using the power versus force technique, the kinesiology, with Ormus in terms of improving your product or evaluating its effectiveness for people?
I use it with everything in my life. And that I can, every time I can possibly remember to use it, it applies to everything. And yes, I do.
How do you use it? Could you give us a little clue, a couple of things maybe to do with
it? There's various ways you can do it, and the book explains these. I use Michelle's technique, which is the duckbill technique. Kind of hard to explain without a visual, but I guess the easier way is to explain David's method. You hold your arm out to your side, and you have another person help you. You simply hold your arm straight out to your side, and you pose the question. It has to be a yes or no question, and it has to be succinctly stated. I can't think of an example off the top of my head. Is this guy a good painter?
Could you give us an example from maybe something that you've questioned in your work with these materials or in your methods and improving your methods or something like that?
Well, for example, when I'm precipitating material, and I use a method that's known as the plateau method, which I've explained to many people, and when I get to the point where I feel I have dropped out all of the relevant material and now all I'm dropping is inactive or inert ingredients, I will do a muscle test on that quickly. Is this material completely precipitated? Have I dropped all the M state now? And I'll get a feedback on that. That's one way it can be used. Pretty much anything you can think of can be answered. Is this the most effective solvent for this particular material? Do I want to use an aqua regia dissolution, or would I be better with acid and peroxide on this particular material? Things like that. Whatever is a factual, as long as it exists in the world and it's a fact, you will get an answer back on it. And when I started to explain it. I don't think I followed through. You hold your arm out to your side, and you have a person attempt to push it down. So you're holding your arm out like you were holding a pail of water straight out to the side of your shoulder, and you ask this question: is this person telling me the truth, yes or no? And that person will then try and push your arm down to your side, and it will be very, very easy for them to push your arm down. You will be virtually weak as a kitten, and if the answer is yes, you will have strength, and they will feel considerable resistance. Of course, you've got to practice with this a little bit in order to get it down, but the method that I use is, like I said, Michelle Small Wright's, which is you make like a little duckbill with your thumb and forefinger. Like you're going to pinch somebody, and you hold your other hand at 90 degrees, like a chain link, and you try to pull your two hands apart, and it will be easy to do if the answer is no. It will be hard to do if the answer is yes. It's the same thing. And he goes into other aspects that are important. You don't want to wear a lot of metal jewelry when you're doing this. You want to try to hold your hands, in the example that I just gave, you want to try to hold your hands near the solar plexus when you do that test. Pretty much it. But he goes into great lengths and great details. You can also assign a consciousness level to materials, which that's one thing that I haven't done. I have never really gone for the number of my stuff. I should do that, I suppose. You could take a particular material and say, is the consciousness level of this material between 5,000 and 6,000? Or is it in excess of 6,000, for example? And you go through, and the scales had to be revised. Originally, it was from 0 to 1,000, with 1,000 supposedly being Christ consciousness. And now I understand it's 15,000, or it may even be beyond this. I haven't read his absolute latest material yet. But
from my guessing, Barry Tom doubts it's 75,000. And
there you go.
I've had some white powder gold tanks, and he's doubted about 2.2 million. So the scale is extremely flexible. What I've noticed is it almost just makes everything obsolete in terms of numerical values and dowsing or kinesiological testing, because it's just anomalous. Almost is just out of the box.
When I was in Europe, a couple of gentlemen were using the power versus force scale to evaluate Ormus, and they also noticed the same thing. It's something that people all over the place have noticed, and they were running a logarithmic scale up into the million, and the Ormus was way up there.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't want to seem discouraging, but I have a bit of a problem with that because I can't see the specifying the units seems to me like it would be a problem in different people's minds. It would be hard to consolidate or reconcile the. That we're all working off the same sheet there. That's why I don't really get into that aspect of it. But, you know, it's definitely an effective method, though. Absolutely something that everybody should know how to use. And no excuse for ever being duped again. You've got to...
Yeah. While you were talking, Joe, someone else piped up with a comment and it got lost. Who was that?
I'm sorry. I was going to reply to Barry's comment about a logarithmic scale.
Speak up, please.
You can't hear at all.
Yeah, we can barely hear you, dear. I heard logarithmic scale. That was it.
That would imply that the people who developed that method of testing believed that the powers of Ormus materials increased in a logarithmic way. And that would be something that would be interesting to know about.
Okay.
You mean like X?
That makes sense?
Very much, definitely. I did videotape a lot of their conversations, so one of these days we'll try to get that information out and about.
It's a very interesting product that Dennis suggested it because he found it interesting. We go with the Sea of Joy. It's a very unique material. In fact, it is the only one that I know of my repertoire and the few people that I'm most closely associated with. And that it's a dual material. It has a salt component and a mineral component. It's a mineral-laden salt, which is mined from an area in Texas, there goes the voice, which used to be an ancient seafloor. And it was loaded with life forms and, of course, tons of Ormus. And now, of course, with the geological, archaeological things happening, it has become buried deep in a mine. And they've mined this material out, and it's a deep reddish brown salt. Looks kind of like rock salt that you'd put on the road when it snows. And when you dissolve it in water, it dissolves like salt, but then you have a thick red sediment that's left over, which is a heavy-duty mineral dust component. So what I have to do is dissolve it and then decant off the salt brine solution and retain the sediment, which I then subject to the dry method, boiling it in lye and precipitating it out. The other one I just do the simple wet method to, and I wind up with actually two sets of precipitate. And after they're both washed, then I combine them, and it becomes a dual material. It has a slightly reddish-brown cast to it. It's not completely white from the material. Similar to when you make pink Himalayan salt manna, it has that little bit of a pinkish to it. That's about what it comes out like. But interesting material. Don and I both co-discovered it at the same time. And Don has his white dove, which nobody else makes. And so he suggested, this can be your particular material that nobody else makes. And I don't know how the heck we came up with Sea of Joy. We were just thinking of a name, and it just popped out. I don't really remember which one of us thought of it, but there you have it. Anything else, Dennis, or you want me to go ahead with my white gold?
What qualities are usually reported on when people have Sea of Joy?
Sea of Joy seems to be an energetic material. People seem to be almost like a cup of coffee kind of reaction to it. They go without eating. They'll find that they're not hungry until very late in the evening. They've forgotten to eat, kind of a deal, and they don't need six cups of coffee anymore because they've already got a natural energy that seems to come from the material. That's pretty much the gist of the reaction I get on it. In fact, my own private symbol for it when I'm working on the various mixtures and I don't want to get them mixed up and crossed up is I put a lightning bolt on the beaker for Sea of Joy because it gives you an electric charge. Boy, this voice is
cool.
Not going to last much longer, guys.
No, it's lasting great, thanks, Joe. It's going great. And listen, I'd love you to talk about You know how you talk to me about what you do when you actually make homeless for people out of gold? If they send you some gold.
Sorry, say it again.
Which I think is an incredible offer. Would you tell the list about that?
We
tell them about what? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay, well, I'll just say it again. Remember our conversation, you said that that you make almost out of gold for people if they send you the gold.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's what I've been trying to get out of here. Right, you'll notice on my site that I have a pay button, a buy button for all of my different materials, with the exception of white gold. My white gold that I make, which is not a dry powder, I prefer to leave it in a saline solution because several reasons. It's much more well protected that way against EMF and magnetism. And white powdered gold, when you dry it out, tends to lose its effectiveness quite rapidly, especially when you're shipping it around in this sea of EMF that we live in anymore, and microwave towers and computers and what have you. It just seems to last much longer if you leave it in a saline suspension, so I don't dry it out. But you'll notice there's no price on the site for white gold, and a lot of people think that's because the gold price varies, which is true to some extent, but basically the reason is I don't charge for making white powder gold. For anything else, you can simply order with a credit card or check or what have you, but white gold, I ask people to send me the metal to make it from. It's generally coins, the most common coin being a gold maple leaf. There's several others that are, as long as it's 0.999, what we call 4/9 purity. American U.S. coins are not good. Krugerrands are no good. They all contain too many impurities, but the Canadian maple leaf, the Chinese panda, the Australian kangaroo coin, a Credit Suisse, which is a little square piece, and recently one that I hadn't seen before, a Singapore Singold, it's called. That also was good purity. What I do is ask people to send me the gold metal, and then I make it into white gold. And, of course, the amount isn't exact. It comes out to 2.5 or 3.5 or 2.25 bottles or what have you. Whatever is left over in the odd fraction of a bottle, I keep that as payment for my services. And I do include free shipping as well. So I don't actually charge for white gold. You buy the metal and send it to me, and I make the white gold and send it back to you, and I just keep whatever is left over that doesn't make a full bottle as payment for what I do. And I think I'm the only one that does that, as far as I know. It's just, I don't want to turn this into a political rant or anything, but, I mean, this is just my way of trying to make a little difference in the system, that this capitalistic system that has pretty much pulled our planet down almost to the point of nothing. I think we could do a lot better than that. And I also give you a chance to work with the gold yourself and put your intent into it, meditate with it a little bit before you get it to me. And that enables you to actively participate in the creation of the material also. And most people have been okay with this, and works out very well. So that's my reason for not having a price on the site.
Isn't it a fabulous offer, guys?
I'm sorry?
I was just saying it's a fabulous offer. Probably everyone's got themselves on the mute. That's why they're not saying
it just seems to make sense to me. That way I get my white gold. I mean, I'm not a rich person by any means. I'm on Social Security retired, so I don't have a lot of money coming in. What little extra I make off of this is certainly not enough to survive on. I couldn't buy it otherwise. There's no way I could go out and buy a bar of gold. So this enables me to have my white gold at no expense, and people get theirs at the absolute rock bottom price. I don't know how you could possibly beat the cost of gold for the price of your white gold. So everybody wins.
So I've got a question, or somebody in the audience had a question.
Okay.
Would you please restate it again?
We can't hear you.
I'm not hearing anything.
Just a second. Would you repeat the question again, and I will forward it on to the rest of the group, okay?
Okay.
If the product's for a healing purpose, does it ever have a healer infuse it with healing energy, like N, before it's sent, or has it even done anything like that?
If the product is for a healing purpose, do you ever have a healer infuse healing energies into it?
Well, most people are not here when I'm doing this. I did have one particular episode when Don and I were working together where two people by the name of Beavis and Marek, I don't know if you know them, they made their own site, which I can't recall what it is now, something with an Egyptian, but one of those individuals was an accomplished psychic, and he came and went into trance when we were doing the sodium burn and concentrated on the gold, and actually made an impact on the process. But other than that, I generally have been working alone when I do this. I think you find
that to be the case with
most alchemists that work alone.
Do you do anything to imprint the material, like resonances or anything like that?
I use the water from a Miracule water processor, which most of you probably know what that is. If you don't, it's a combination filter and several different types of water technology, including noble gas imprintation, imprinting with words. There's what's called an infinity synthesizer. It has a spiral time reversal energy module in it. There's several different processes that are done to the water after it's filtered and reversed osmosis. I think there's, I forget the number, 100,000 different messages that are imprinted on the water. So all of that is done for me in the water that I work with in washing and reducing the material. So once it's made, I have a primary energy, what they call a beamer, a small device which has a mix of noble gases and a magnet, which produces a beam of primary energy, which I expose the material to while it's settling. Excuse me. And that's pretty much the extent of it. I am working on something right now, which you may have heard of, called a MagTet. In fact, I just got some more parts for it yesterday afternoon. Going to make a large tetrahedral shaped coil, which is simply a coil of copper wire wound in the shape of a three-sided pyramid polygon, four surfaces, three sides, and a base. And when you energize this, it makes a very, very unique magnetic field, configuration. The particular person that developed this has a industrial chemical company, chiefly penetrating oil, stuff like WD-40, which gets rusty nuts and bolts loose and so forth. And he exposes it to this tetrahedron magnetic field, and the U.S. military awarded him a contract for penetrating oil. They use exclusively his penetrating oil, according to his advertisement. At least at that time. I don't know how current that is. That was 2 or 3 years ago. But there are some significant properties that are instilled into liquids from this special magnetic field. It basically makes the magnetic field form like a laser beam. They stacked up BBs there and then turned on the energy, and they turned on the current, and the magnetic field is in the configuration of a perfectly straight line beaming from the apex of the tetrahedron straight down into the center of the base, just like a laser beam, which if you are familiar with.
Is that one of the materials that tetrahedron's made out of, Joe?
Oh, it's just a coil of copper wire. That's all it is a
coil.
Rather than being a round coil, which is what we are, you know, we are bilaterally symmetrical beings. We tend to think of things in left and right, and, you know, this is a three-sided animal, which is pretty well unheard of in electricity and electronics. I have never, ever, ever seen anything of a triangular or trigonal shape at all in electronics before, ever. And I've been involved with electronics since I was 11 years old. That's more years than I care to remember. But incredible device.
So
that's
this
what
device,
I'm building
to. It sounds like what you've described, Joe, here is a pyramid, a three-sided pyramid made of copper wire coil.
Right. And I'm going to feed, the intention is to feed tones in there, phi ratio tones. Got to dig that up again. There's a list of musical frequencies that you can play in there, and I think that should have an energizing effect on the material.
Okay, we had another question from the audience, and I'll repeat it if the lady who posed it will.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, does he have the capability to do Curlian photography? And if
no.
might that pyramid generate the same type of image that's on the Twin Serpents page?
The same kind of an effect on what?
Does he have the ability to...
Yeah, I heard her. She was asking if I have the ability to do Curlian photography. No, I don't own that equipment. I don't.
Oh. There's that...
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't have the equipment, no.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
I know Jason from ZP Tech has done quite a bit of that. I've seen amazing photographs. Actually, I don't know if... I wonder if... Does anybody know if anyone's ever done that with digital cameras? It's usually done with Polaroid. I wonder if that works with digital. I think you actually have to be in proximity to the sensitive surface to do that. So that probably
Thomas,
to do.
Thomas, who I think is still on this call, he had his aura photoed. And it's not the same as Curlian photography, but
it was digital.
Exactly how they do it.
No, it works with a Polaroid camera.
Yeah, most of them are Polaroid that I've heard of.
You put your hand on a plate, and they take your photograph. I don't know what kind of electronics. They cost somewhere around $10,000.
Yeah, not this week. Maybe next week.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Joe, this is Richard from Vancouver.
Hold on a second.
Please speak up.
Richard in Vancouver?
Vancouver Island?
Yes.
British Columbia. I took some digital pictures of precipitation trying to capture a sort of a spark that we saw in there. And I think the sparks came out better with the digital camera than they did looking at them from the naked eye, but I'm still trying to separate the reflected light because I think the flash probably amplified some of it, but they were in the same spot. And I got a kind of an unusual effect when precipitating seawater that I collected from a magnetic anomaly. I don't know if you're aware of what a magnetic anomaly is, but it's a natural formation that's strong enough to divert a marine compass, and they're noted on marine charts here in British Columbia. The water that I collected had some, the first batch I collected had some very unusual properties in that, first of all, I got a lot of precipitate out of it. After a couple of days of settling, it was 50% precipitate. And secondly, I noticed that I was working with a fellow alchemist, Conti, and he'd suggested that he'd seen a spark in there. So the second bucket that we worked on, we really paid attention to, and I had the camera ready. And we did indeed see these slightly neon, very faint blue sparks in the water. I'm pretty sure it's not from bioluminescence because they were apparent in... Well, natural room light. We did this right on the boat that we collected the water from. And the water was quite carefully filtered. And I did notice there was some bioluminescence in the filter. But I'm pretty sure the filter would have taken most of the little critters that do that out. It was a fairly fine filter that we ran it through. I don't know what the micron rate was, but it's probably around 5 or something. In any case... there's some other qualities to the water that were a little bit unusual as well, but those were the most important ones so far. But I had a question concerning the seawater that I'm using. Now, I went back on the full moon, the last full moon, and I collected another 200 gallons of the stuff, and it behaved more or less like normal seawater, and I got it from very close to the same place. The only difference being that it's a fairly narrow channel, and the water on either side of this rapid is fairly deep, so you get very good deep water mixing there, which is why I originally picked the spot, plus the magnetic anomaly, of course. But the second batch has got a normal amount of precipitate in it, which is like, you know, maybe a liter and a half, 2 liters to 4 liters per 5 gallon bucket, where I was originally getting about 10. And the only difference that I can think of, we picked it up on a slightly different tide due to time constraints and whatnot. It was the end of the flood tide. And we also had a Canadian warship in the channel right next to us while we were collecting the water. And I don't know what they were doing there, but they sort of hung around until we finished. Now, would it be possible that the electronics on the darn thing would have affected it?
Oh, no.
They were strong enough that you could actually see the interference patterns on our electronic equipment. We only had a sounder going just to make sure we didn't run up on the beach. But the other thing completely interfered with everything we had. And there was you could actually hear their pinging on through the hull of the boat.
Wow. Has anybody? I know that Arthur at Liquid Chi, when he's working with his product, he now and then gets a shock from it or sees a spark in it. And the same with Doug Schmidt at Mountain Manna. He often sees or gets sparks from his product. Have you seen anything like that, Joe?
The only thing I've ever had with that was I did a trade with a particular individual for some goji berry juice. And the first bottle of that goji berry juice, when I went to grab that seal off the top of it after you take the cap off, it positively threw me back against the door. I don't know whether that was a static or what. I mean, this has already gone through a box and a bag and plastic packing peanuts and everything else. I don't see how it could very well have been a static charge from the UPS truck after going through all that. And it was up there in the humid air of summertime. And when I pulled that little foil cap off of that goji, man, I'm telling you, it knocked me for a loop. That's the only time I've experienced a shock from any material.
Oh, I've had that happen I've had exactly the same thing happen with Arthur's material once.
Yeah, not gets your attention.
Not very often, but one time it's happened.
The sparks that I saw in this first precipitation were quite visual. They weren't like a little spark jumping off the surface. They were deep in the precipitate. And they were sort of, you could see them happening somewhere in the center of the vortex while we were stirring. And they actually produced a little flash of light. And they last for maybe a quarter of a second. They're just like little, almost like bioluminescent sparks, except I'm sure they weren't bioluminescent.
And what kind of material were you precipitating?
Seawater from a magnetic anomaly.
Oh, from the magnetic, okay. Wow. That's really interesting.
The other thing that was interesting about this water is that I made several, I distributed it to several friends, and I got some extremely rave reviews from the stuff. The most vociferous was a guy who's been phoning me every night and talking to me for about 2 hours, who lives on Quadra Island, and he'd been poisoned, mercury poisoning, about some 30-odd years ago. And he's been under treatment by naturopaths and doctors ever since, and he's been in constant pain since then. And the day after, the first day I gave it to him, after he'd been taking it for a couple of days, he pulled me back, and he just said, wow, he said, this is the first time I've been 98% pain-free for 30 years. And then He phoned me back the second date. He says, okay, it's official. Now I'm 100% pain-free. He says, I got to have some more of that. So I got him over here. I'm teaching him how to make it. And he's just ecstatic. It's my friend Ron from Quadra Island, and he's a great guy. He's right into health and health foods and everything else like that, and not into medical stuff. So as you can probably imagine why, they've really bent, fold, and spindled him for quite some time. Anyhow, he's recovering very rapidly, and I think he's up to about 4 or 5 ounces of that precipitate a day now. He's just guzzling it down.
I'm going to drop the line 2, the free room.
In any case, I've got quite a bunch of this stuff, and I still have some of the original batch left. I was going to try and get some down to Sharon Rose for her meeting so they could compare the two of them. Now, I've been taking volumetric information down with this stuff, and I use 300 mils of sodium hydroxide in a 4-molar solution to precipitate the each batch. And that brought the second batch that I collected up to an endpoint of about 10.2, and it stabilized after sitting for a while. I took note of the pH about every 5 minutes. It stabilized at 10.6 or thereabouts. It never went over 10.7. It went up to 10.7 once and then went back down to 10.6. But and then you give it a bit of a stir and it comes back down again. So the old batch, the same amount of sodium hydroxide for the same volume of water brought the end point to 9.6, and there was a heck of a lot more precipitate in it. But I just can't quite figure what the difference is, because I got it pretty close to the same area, unless I've managed to hit the very tip of that anomaly on the first trip, to which end I'm going to try and get a magnetometer or a really good marine compass, because you can see it on a compass when you go near it. It swings a compass.
Do you have any ideas about what might have caused that, Joe?
I was about to ask him, is that a permanent location? Is it always in exactly the same spot?
I hope so. The magnetic anomaly doesn't move. It's there all the time.
As you know, we've got all kinds of stuff going on with pole shift right now. Things are changing greatly,
yeah.
So I'm wondering if that might be the inklings of a new central location or something there.
I've noticed one thing. Whenever I take a boat past that spot, you pretty well have to shut the automatic pilot off if it's hooked up to a magnetic compass. As a fisherman, I used to do this regularly, and the whole exercise is fairly important, because if you go through that fairly narrow channel with the pilot on, and you get close to this magnetic anomaly, it'll steer you right onto the beach.
I'd never heard of any of that type of activity in that area before. That's
interesting. Well, there's quite a few of them around here. There's at least 5 that I know of, and they're listed on the charts. They're marked on the charts because they are navigation hazards. Especially if you're one of those kind of people that puts the pilot on and goes and makes a cup of coffee.
Was it the same time, tidal cycle?
No, the first one I got right on the new moon, or very close to it. And
uh-huh.
The second one I collected at 4:30 to 5:15 a.m. on the full moon.
And where were the tides then? Was it high tide, low tide?
They were both close to the end of the flood, but I collected the second batch quite a bit later in the tide, maybe an hour later in the tide than the first batch. The first batch I got it right on the end of the tide because it was a bigger tide, being full moon. And the currents in there are really dangerous. There's also a natural whirlpool there that is big enough to disappear a 34-foot fish boat, which is basically what I use to collect it. It's converted fish boats.
My guess would be that it's the result of the mixing of deep water and shallow water and possibly even water from rivers and so on that are running
exactly
into there.
That's exactly my thought. That's why I originally went over there to collect it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many fjords that are it's in the confluence of about three glacier-fed fjords.
There you go.
Very close to about two more. And
there you go.
The water is less saline than outside seawater, so there's actually less salt in it. And I've done salt reduction with it, too.
And that water was frozen during a time when the magnetic environment of the world was quite different.
Yes, and I think that has quite a bit of influence on it. I'm also getting water from the head of one of these fjords the next time I go, but it's about a two-day trip because to get it on the right part of the tide in the morning, you have to travel. You know, there's about four hours difference in where you go to the head of the fjord and where you're getting it in where the water mixes.
Now, well, hey, take lots of pictures next time.
I have
to. Be sure you take lots of pictures of your precipitate while you do it, because that's very interesting, those lightning sparks.
I do have pictures.
Really, I'd love to see an AVI of that.
Well, I will email you copies of the pictures. I have them all nicely on my computer. I'm having a little trouble with it right now. I need a new monitor. But the pictures, I recorded quite the area, including there's a couple of shots of the snow-capped mountains. It's hard to see the glaciers, but there is one glacier evident in the background there. But the one glacier that the water comes from is fairly significant. And I believe it's called the Homasco Glacier.
Excellent. Hey, I think we need to take a couple questions here. Anybody else have some questions for Joe?
I do. Sorry. Hi, this is Mickey from Dallas.
Hi, Mickey.
I came in late. I caught it just like the barely. Where are you getting the water from? The lake or something?
Okay, so that was somebody else that's talking about that. Go ahead. I didn't even get their name either. So.
That water. Were you referring to me, Richard?
Yes.
Vancouver
Island. Okay, that water comes from a channel between Vancouver Island and the mainland and North America, and it's fairly tidally active. And there's a huge vortex there that's active when the tide's running. And there's also a magnetic anomaly right underneath it. It's the magnetic anomaly is a magnetic disturbance that's powerful enough to swing your compass if you're a mariner. And it will definitely confuse your automatic pilot or you're going through a fog by the straight compass. You can't depend on your compass at all.
Send us the latitude and longitude, and we'll Google Earth it.
I think I have it right here.
Yeah. Well, send it off to me, and forward it to anybody that asks, okay?
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
This is Barry.
Okay, Barry.
Mickey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hi.
Joe was telling about a material that he got from Texas. It's a salt. Where did you get that? Where does that salt come from in Texas, Joe?
I do not know. I get it from a distributor who will not tell me other than Texas.
Ah.
It's a secret.
Is it possible for other people to get the salt, the raw salt?
Absolutely. If you hold on a second, I'll go grab the bottle. Hold on.
Okay.
Well, that's right. What do you think?
Mickey?
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Are you interested in making some yourself?
Oh, most definitely, yes.
Well, this material is local to you, I mean sort of local to you probably, since it's from Texas and you're from Texas.
Yeah. Well, thanks for thinking of me. Yeah, that's great. It's funny.
I will
tell them.
Great. And,
okay.
Go ahead.
Am I interrupting somebody?
No, go ahead.
The company is Premier Research Labs, and they are in Round Rock, Texas. Do we have a phone number here? I may have it on my computer. I'll take a look. But the name of it is simply Premier Pink Salt, which I don't know why it's pink, because it certainly isn't pink. More of an Indian red brownish. And let me do a quick email search here and see if I have. I asked them for an assay on it. I'm sorry?
Send me the information and I'll forward it on.
Okay, I will do that. I know I asked them about an assay and I didn't really get a full assay, but I got some information about it. And I'll get that to you as soon as we get done here.
Great.
Any other questions for me out there, anybody?
I just wanted to say that
Joe has been very generous with me when I've ordered my products from him, and I feel that he has helped me a great deal for healing using his products and feeling good, joyful. So thank you,
very
Joe.
Good. Thank you. It's always good to hear. I never get tired of hearing that people are getting good results.
Who's the one that will make it if you send the gold?
That's me.
Yeah, wait.
As long as it's 4/9 pure. You don't want an American coin. You don't want a Krugerrand. Get a gold maple leaf or a Chinese panda, Australian kangaroo, Swiss credit, Syngold from Singapore. And there's another one, too, that escapes me right now. But just make sure it's 0.9999, and I'll take it from there. I have to have a minimum of 0.2 ounce to do a burn. You can buy 1/10 ounce coins. You can buy 1/4 ounce. You can buy ounces, of course, with a minimum of 0.2 ounce, or roughly six grams or so. They're doing it in grams. Usually it's 2 ounces that they sell it in. Okay.
We didn't hear your question. I'm sorry.
I was wondering what in that.
What I was just talking about?
No, hold on. There's a question. Go ahead with the question.
Who?
Somebody had a question.
I thought it was Mickey.
Oh, this is Adam.
Okay.
I did have a question for you, Jill.
Okay.
And one thing we haven't talked about this afternoon is the Red Dragon business of Gerald's that you've been passing on through some other people. I was wondering what comments you might make on that and how it fits in the general perspective of the Precipice.
Yeah, it's an oddball material, but it is another pure gold product.
Uh-huh.
That's about as pure as you can get. It's basically nothing but gold metal electrodes and water and a little peroxide. I found that we can actually eliminate the potassium nitrate step, that if you basically use about a half a teaspoon of 35% peroxide in about, I think I work in a, my container's a 2-liter, is it? Yeah, I think that's a 2-liter, that one. 2 liters of distilled water with about a quarter of a teaspoon to half a teaspoon. It evaporates when it gets hot anyway, so you don't have to worry about it. And put your electrodes in there, and very low current. Very, very low current. It doesn't draw much at all. You've got to put a little bit of salt in there. What I do is I have a series ammeter, a multimeter with a digital amperage scale. The power supply that I use is 60 volts DC, but it doesn't have to be any great amount of current. It can be a tiny, tiny transformer, nothing expensive, very cheap. Run that all in series, transformer, meter, electrodes, back to the transformer. Sprinkle in salt, or ordinary pickling salt, non-iodized salt. If you have some salt left over from an evaporation, that's fine too. You don't want to use a sea salt, a pure salt. Sprinkle it in just the tiniest little flecks and watch your current. As soon as your current gets up to anywhere from 50 to 75 milliamps, you're done. Let it sit there and cook for 12 to 16 hours if you like. And it will gradually take on a pinkish purple, reddish. Sometimes, you know, it depends on the incident light, what color it is. You can look at six different people, look at it, and come up with seven different colors. It's kind of an iridescent. Sometimes it even looks greenish if you hit it from the right angle. It's typically purple-red or reddish-brown, depending on how you look at it. And it warms up from the current, and that warmth will help to evaporate off the peroxide, which is not a big problem. A quarter of a teaspoon in 2 liters of water is not very strong, but the heat will drive most of it off anyway, and if you just leave it loosely capped, most of the peroxide will gas off, and peroxide's not bad stuff to be eating anyway. It's very good for chelating heavy metals, so it's no problem. It also acts as a preservative, so it helps to keep mold from forming and so forth in there. It's a very interesting substance. Strangest thing about it is it doesn't dissolve in acid. It's just weird. You would think that it would dissolve readily, but it does not. Something about the structure that it forms with water, it's been suggested that it's a polymer with water. I don't know. I can't verify that, but it doesn't dissolve in acid. It's a very strange material. But I find the chief effect of that is incredible dream activity, especially the first two or three nights. And then I try to switch off. I'll go to another type of mana and come back a few days later. And boy, I tell you, the first night or so, it's just nonstop dreaming. That was real rough. I didn't make anything out at all.
What was the name?
Can anybody understand that?
That is the name of the product, I believe.
That's the Red Dragon.
Is that, what you call the product?
Right.
Okay.
Also known as Jarrell's method of red electro gold. There's a write-up on it. I don't even know who that is, but you're breaking up really badly.
You're incomprehensible, Dennis.
Is that Dennis? We can't understand you at all, Dennis. I think you're losing your battery. Did you get anything out of that, Barry?
Didn't get it.
You got another phone you can pick up, Dennis?
Early when he was talking, I heard like a beat in the background almost.
Yeah, cell phones are the scourge of humanity, I tell you.
I actually like the Red Dragon that you make also.
It's interesting stuff, isn't it? And it's actually the easiest of all. I mean, as long as you're not afraid of electricity. 60 volts is something to respect, but the current is so low, and it virtually makes itself. It's very, very, very easy to work with, and it's fun. I take it every night. I use it to wash down my vitamin pills at night.
And I've had good success with mixing some of the Red Dragon with a lotion that I get from the health food store, which is all organic, and using it topically on my skin.
Uh-huh.
So that's been something that, you know, I've...
Is this Arlene?
While. Yes, it's Arlene.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I did have one person that was really happy with the gold cream that I sent them, so that was you, I know.
That was excellent.
What else have you noticed from that, Arlene?
Well, I mean, I've had a lot of stress in my life lately, but you know, take the time to focus in and relax myself and put positive thoughts out, I think that's when I have the best results. I would consider myself a newbie still at this point, so...
And what are you calling results? What results have you noticed from taking this Red Dragon?
I have had a lot of vivid dreams when I've used it, very, like, colorful, and but those things, you know, happen from time to time. I think I've had an overall more calming effect on myself, so also something that's been good.
The beauty of it is it doesn't require any expensive raw materials or reagents. and there's no excuse for anybody to not make it themselves, and it's a good way to keep getting a steady supply of Ormus into your body for very little money. Everybody should learn how to make it. It's very, very simple to do.
And it's also salt-free, too, which is...
no salts, right.
Which is different from, you know, some of your other products. But I usually try to take a little bit of one or two products, you know, each day. Sometimes I go for a couple of days without anything. But for me lately, this last week, I don't know if it's... I read this thing somewhere about energy coming in for a person around their birthday, and my birthday is coming up. And since last week or so,
I've had fishing for a cake here.
That I just feel, you know, overwhelmed. Like I want to share it with everybody. Just all good feelings. And. Well, I actually read, and I'm not sure where I read it, but if you subtract the number of leap years that have occurred since the day you were born, and for me, I'm going to be 45, so there's about 11 of them, and you take your birth date and minus those days, so 11 days before my birthday, actually 12 days before my birthday, I started checking my energy and seeing, but on that, like around that 11th day, a lot of energy came in, and it just felt like it was an all-day thing. I said, wow, this is a great birthday present. So I've been feeling good since then, and the only other thing different that I've done in the last 4 weeks for myself is that I've had some ozone treatments, where they use like a infrared sauna to heat you up, and then they let the ozone fill that sauna, and it basically fills the whole room, too, that you're in. And I feel that that's improved my health a great deal. So I don't know if
you felt like you felt like it was a detox sort of thing, or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, my skin has improved a great deal since then. And I had, I've had great success with using a lot of different things, miracle-like, overnight. But I was still having reoccurrence of the problem. You know, it would always come back. And now I just feel that I'm done with it. It's, you know, definitely that energy I feel for me has changed. And before using Ormus products, I felt that I did have, you know, psychic occurrences here and there. But since I began using them, I think it's about two summers, well, it'll be 2 years this June, I've had so many more occurrences. But I also feel that it actually has a lot to do with where you put your attention. You know, if you focus your attention on healing the planet, and being positive, as I've heard many talks from Barry about that, I think that, you know, has greatly improved my life.
But Barry, I want to throw something at you here because she just made me think of it. You know, we continually talk about psychic cities and stuff with this, not city, city with these materials.
Uh-huh.
Have you noticed, you know, we all get psychic flashes, and it's just basically a matter of whether or not we listen to them. It's similar to when you wake up and you've had a dream. I mean, there are certain conscious steps that you have to take in order to retain that dream. I mean, there's numerous books that tell you how to do that, of which I have limited success with any. But there are definitely some steps that you have to do in order to remember that dream. And I think similarly, there are some steps that you have to do in order to learn how to retain that psychic information. Psychic information comes to you similarly in a flash, in a kind of a half-dreamy-like state. It's not a conscious, straight delivery of information. It's a very shadowy, like half here, half somewhere else type of delivery. And we tend not to trust it. You know, the example that I use is phone numbers. I have a phenomenal memory for numbers. I don't know why. It's not anything I've done. I'm not bragging. It just exists. I can remember phone numbers like crazy. And I'll sit here and I'll think, what's this guy's number? And instantly I'll get the answer coming out of the Akasha. And then I will proceed to look it up because I don't believe myself. And I will sit there, and about the time I finally found it, I've half forgot what it was that I thought it was. But 99 out of 100, I was right. And if I had simply walked over and dialed the phone, it would have been the right number. And you know, out of fear of wasting 50 cents and dialing the wrong person, you don't do it. But I just wondered if you had any comments on that as far as have you had any luck in learning to trust your own intuitions anymore?
Well, I've found that unlimited long distance really helps.
Yeah.
Because
that you know what I'm talking about.
Instant confirmation of your intuition. And that would be really really helpful in trusting it.
I remember that was one of the initial conversations you had with the Essene back when about, and he made some comment about, yeah, but if that doesn't mean you're going to listen to it, you know?
Yeah.
That really works. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, much better.
I called in another phone. One of the things that I've found that happens that helps really a lot, and that is constant experimentation and validation of your intuitive knowings. And I used to do these experiments because I found that if you think about someone, they cannot help but thinking about you, even briefly. If you hold someone in your attention, then they're going to feel or
calling party hold.
Yeah, it's like that morphogenic field of consciousness that Professor Dr. Rupert Sheldrake talked about in his book, The Secret, the new science of life and its other materials. And so I started experimenting with people, and then I'd ring them and get validation of, because I'd get a sense of where they were at and what they were doing, and I'd ring them and get validation. The more validation I got, the stronger I become in that particular area. And so my experience, if you want to develop a skill, just get validation of it as quick as possible, and then your faith and your trust goes way up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And consequently, then you don't have any doubt anymore. Doubt is just a thing in the past.
Trusting and believing in yourself.
I'll give you an incredible example. I used to be a mechanic rebuilding electric motors and industrial equipment like that back when I was younger. And it was in Miami, and the environment was salt water and rusty, and irrevocably these things would always need to have bolts replaced. You had a big pump that had like 36 bolts on it. You knew absolutely that the 8 or 9 of them along the bottom edge that sat in the salty water were going to be beyond dealing with, and they had to be cut out and drilled out and replaced. So anytime I got to working on one of these things, as I was going past the bolt bin, I would just reach out and grab a handful of bolts of the right size and continue on my way back to my workbench. And I mean to tell you, I can't tell you how many times, without looking, without thinking about it, just reach and grab, I pulled precisely the correct number of bolts that wound up needing to be replaced. I mean, it was so far beyond coincidence, it's not even funny. I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of times over the course of 7 years. It just got to where it wasn't even a surprise anymore.
What happens is we develop specialties in the area of consciousness where we're totally, unarguably competent in some specific area. And my question is, how come we can't have that level of competence in the areas we want? Well, because
like lottery numbers.
Practice.
I haven't even really been taking it, and I've had some very strange things happen the last few weeks. Almost everything I try to ask for, I end up finding the answer for it. Or close to it, and it's kind of, and these are big answers like cures for cancer and
little details like that. Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to start doing that stuff.
Did you hear about the sodium bicarbonate is that kills cancer?
I just read something about that, like
last week. I posted it a couple of times because it's quite remarkable and very powerful information to have. But look, since I got back onto the call, I wanted to ask, do you actually make and sell that Red Dragon, Joe?
Yes.
Great.
Yes, I'm sorry?
How much do you charge for it?
That's the least expensive material in my repertoire. It's $39 for 8 ounces. Consequently, anything I make is 4 for $3. In other words, roughly if it's $40 a bottle, 4 bottles would be $160. I sell it for the 3 price. Anything except for the sodium burn materials, you know. So it's $50 a bottle, 4 bottles is $150. That's the deal I offer on everything.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, buddy.
Okay.
I interrupted someone else who was saying something.
Don't think so.
No.
Do you have the, you said it was posted on the internet? I didn't quite grab the.
What was posted?
Would you give us your website again?
My website is www.AtlantisAlchemy, all in one word, ATLANTIS alchemy.com.
This is Jarrell's method of, and I didn't get the
right. Right, Jarrell's electro gold method, and the material I call is Red Dragon. That's the name I've given it.
Oh, okay.
It's the exact same material as Jarrell's electro gold, and I no longer use the potassium nitrate in the process, which is not a relevant fact as far as the product is concerned. It isn't contained in the final product anyway, but it's now made strictly with peroxide gold and salt and water. And what you're left with is basically just a tiny, tiny amount of peroxide, and it's such an insignificant amount of salt, it's not funny. I mean, like 3 or 4 little crystals that you would find on the table if you spilled it. That's all. That's all.
Do you have that written up anywhere?
Sure, it's on your site.
No, I mean about the
salt. Oh, the new. No, I'll do an update for you.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
I will do it.
Now, if somebody wants to write you with a further question about any of your products,
absolutely.
Could you
email link on the site, or it's jmlello@msn.com, all lowercase jmlello, jmlello@msn.com. I always answer emails in vivid detail.
How vivid does it get in text anyway, Joe?
That's great lengths.
Hey, Joe, the gold that you use as the electrodes for this process?
Yeah, I use. I don't do the Jarrell's theory. For some reason, he does round, like, finishing nails. I don't know what his reasoning was for that. With an electrolysis process, its surface area is what the game's all about, so obviously the more surface area, the more reaction. And I use a flat plate. Actually, what I did was roll out a 1-ounce coin into a strip, which winds up being, you know, the width of a 1-ounce coin, which is like 1.5 inches or so, and it was darn near 1 foot long, and cut it in half. And there's my electrodes. They're basically about 6 inches and the thickness of about 6 pieces of aluminum foil all put together. And a couple of alligator clips. I just jam them into a piece of styrofoam, which holds them sturdy and provides a place to mark plus and minus. You want to keep the same polarity throughout the process. Hook them up with alligator clips to your power supply and set it on top of a beaker. And you got your distilled water. Just sprinkle in the salt till your current comes up to 60 or 70 milliamps and go away. And when you come back later that night, you have yourself a big gold bottle of Red Dragon.
Hey, I'll add one more thing to that.
In print anywhere, Joe?
Yes, I just was talking about that with Barry. I'm going to write an update because we used to do a two-step. We used to do potassium nitrate. and then switch over to salt. And now we do it all in one step, so it's even easier. We used to go back and forth.
Take a camera and go to everybody's house and film you all. No.
Well, you're welcome. As I say, I have a standing invitation. Anytime anybody wants to come do a sodium burn or any other process, you're welcome to come, and I'll show you exactly how to do it.
You just walk on down to Yuma.
Yeah, just stick your thumb out and make sure you're wearing a fire suit.
just don't go in July and August.
Yeah, right now the weather is beautiful. It's just starting to get into the zone of hell. The surface of the sun, literally 121 degrees it was here last, and we've had 1.8 inches of rain in 9 months.
Well,
bone dry.
Solar flares when they're doing it?
Yuma, Arizona.
I read that the solar flares helps the Ormus if the sun's acting up or something. I don't know if anybody had experimented with that.
Well, they affect it. I don't know about helping it, but they definitely affect it. They affect everything. A lot of radiation comes out during solar flares.
And one of the things I'd like to revisit for a moment, Joe, is that tetrahedron or pyramid with the copper wire.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to get a visual on it. And so basically, as far as I understand, it's a three-sided copper wire structure. And is the copper wire... you said there was copper wire was in coils, and how wide is that coil, and how do you make that coil?
Interesting that you bring that up again. Actually, there is, according to Ron Talmadge, it's very hard to find, and if you order it, you raise a red flag among the black van, unmarked black van set, shall we say, if you order triangular cross-section copper wire. So apparently, this is yet another of the many myriad technologies which they have suppressed. But there is a copper wire is normally a round cross section. It's like, you know, fishing line. It's perfectly round. You can get square. You can get rectangular. I'm familiar with all of this because I used to be an electric motor rewinder, and the large motors use rectangular cross section wire. The reason being, you can wrap the turns closer together, and you get a higher magnetic flux density. Well, if you draw on paper triangles next to each other, draw two little pyramids next to each other with the bases touching, obviously in the middle you could invert another pyramid and set it in there, and you would have virtually a solid wall of copper with nothing wasted other than the layer of insulation which is on the copper wire. Are you with me?
Yep.
You have round wire. You can place the turns close together. However, you've got a good 6 to 7% surface area, which is nothing but air. Air in a magnetic field represents loss. Wherever you don't have copper or a steel core and you have your magnetic field going through air, it's loss. Hysteresis loss, many different types of loss. It's doing no good. So if you can wind up with the triangle, invert a triangle, triangle, invert a triangle, you can literally have two layers in one. Follow me? By the way that they nest, you actually have two layers of wire in the area where you can only get one using a round cross-section. Similarly, it would work for square, but considering we're dealing with a magtech, poetically triangular seems better. Now, it would definitely be fun trying to maintain that triangular orientation while you're winding the coil. That's another theory, but you're only another challenge. But you're only making one coil there. So, but yes, you make a tetrahedral form, and you start at the top, and you run your winding clockwise or counterclock, whichever you choose, and you go down and you come back up, and you go down and you come back up, and you wind on as many layers as you have patience for until it starts to lose its hard tetrahedral shape. And you start making it, you'll understand what I mean. It's very, very difficult to keep it from getting rounded. So you get 5 or 6 layers on there, and you now have a device which will create a laser straight magnetic field, just straight as you can imagine. And if you hold it upside down like a funnel and toss in a handful of ball bearings. They will line up on top of each other like, you know, Chinese acrobats or what have you. Perfectly straight up, up and down line.
Very, and what do you, what do you specifically use
are.
That for, Joe? And
sorry?
By the way, how big is it?
The test example that the guy was working with was about 5 inches high. The base was about 3.5-4 inches. It consists of 4 equilateral triangles, 60 degrees.
Okay.
And what I want to do, and it's definitely a challenge, is to make a magnetic Merkaba. I'm sure you all know what a Merkaba is, with the 2 interspersed tetrahedrons, one with the apex, one edge facing the bottom, one with the flat edge facing. In other words, they like putting 2 funnels together with the wide mouth together on each funnel, and then just push them until they go through each other, which of course is an impossibility, and overlap about 30%. And that's a Merkaba configuration, 2
right.
interspersed tetrahedrons. I want to somehow wind a set of magtets that way and play with the energizing circuit, feed various tones in there and see what I can come up with.
And what do you use this field for?
Well, a lot of things, but first and foremost is obviously would be energizing Ormus is what I'm going to try and use it for.
But how do you electrify it?
A power supply, a DC supply or an AC supply. I use a signal generator capable of producing square, triangle, or sine waves, variable amplitude, and 9 or 10 volts, or whatever you've got to put in there. You can use an ordinary DC power supply and feed DC in there from a battery charger, whatever you got, batteries. AC is obviously more interesting. Things happen with an alternating field, and
so
you can hit certain resonant
frequencies. You're going to have a couple of points where the power gets fed in.
Yeah, the beginning and the end. At the apex and at the end of the base.
Well, given the base has got 3 points, right? So you have to just pick it at some point on the base.
Well, yeah, I don't think that would be all that critical at that point.
Okay.
You've got hundreds of turns there. So.
Are these coils independent then? Or are they,
no, they're all one continuous piece of wire.
Oh.
One continuous winding.
Seems to me there'd be one.
Something that's never, ever been touched on, and I've never in my life seen anything electric copper winding that's triagonal at all. Never.
That's interesting. How do you resolve the last leg on the pyramid?
The last leg, I don't follow you.
Well, if you're using one piece of wire and
right.
you're winding each leg of the pyramid and the bases, I'm assuming, there should be one place where the wire will run into itself.
I'm sorry, I just don't follow the problem. I mean, you're starting in one place and you're winding and then you stop.
Okay, so you've got 3 sides and you start winding from, say, the apex, and you wind down and across and back up to the apex, and then you wind down the other leg. Whichever leg you wind back across to, you're going to have one leg.
I don't think you're looking at this correctly.
Probably.
You're winding around. In other words, if you were on the Great Pyramid in Egypt,
yes.
Okay, we'll start at the bottom instead of the top.
Okay.
You take your roll of copper wire, and you drive a stake in the ground, and you wrap your copper wire around it so that it doesn't go anywhere. And
right.
Now you start walking around the Great Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And you make one lap around the Great Pyramid, and you overlap the wire on the side of the pyramid and stick a piece of scotch tape on it.
Or you're winding it completely. I got you.
And you go around the Great Pyramid again.
Yeah, I see.
And when
okay.
you come to the point where you started,
yeah,
you stick another. Got me?
And you're using.
You're not winding down the 3 rods.
You're winding around the pyramid.
Around the entire shape.
I got you. That's interesting. Okay, now
yeah.
I
see. And now if you can imagine 2 interspersed in the Merkaba configuration, that's where it gets hairy. How do you do that? I'm thinking split form, your coil form, will have to be split at approximately 30% of its length, of its height, I should say, its altitude, and you insert that in the other tetrahedron. It rotated 30 degrees, obviously, horizontally, so that one has an edge protruding, the other has a face protruding along the x-axis. And there you go. You've got two interspersed windings, and the magnetic field should theoretically precisely overlap and coincide. Only one will be north, one will be south, if that's indeed the configuration. I don't even know that.
I'm sure glad that there are people out there that can think of these things.
Yes, it's refreshing to periodically tie your brain in a knot and then untie it again.
Well, exercise. Of that, Joe.
What's that?
Well, I'm requesting some pictures.
Can do.
That'd be great. And the question is, how are we gonna access those pictures, Joe?
I'll throw them up on my site.
Excellent, fabulous.
I'll put a link on the guidance page. At the bottom of the guidance page, I'll put click here for MagTed information.
And that wasn't what all the helicopters were about over your place yesterday.
Quite possibly. I never did find out what that was. We had quite a going on here last night. I don't know. I really think it was an air show, but I haven't had a chance to get a newspaper and find out.
All the helicopters were congregating over Joe's place.
God, I was trying to talk to Dennis last night. It sounded like an invasion. I had literally helicopters every 5 minutes, about 100 feet above the house, and fireworks going off, only not a continuous show, just one about every 5 or 6 minutes. Sounded like a cannon shot. I was expecting the jackbooted troops to come in the front door at any minute.
You're testing your psychic manifestation powers?
God, I was not manifesting that, believe me. You will tell us how to precipitate this material.
Questions, otherwise we'll pull the plug on this call.
Yes, and I'm utterly amazed that my voice actually worked.
I told you it would.
The energy input was a success, folks. Thank you.
Oh, it's very nice, isn't it? It's great.
Yes. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it, Dennis. Thank you for talking me into it. And thanks, everybody, for hanging out.
It's great having you here, Joe. Any last questions before we bail?
Yep. Thank you, Dennis. I just wanted to say that the first post I ever read was on the Wake Girl book was yours, and I think that's what steered me into this. I can't remember the content of the post now, but I can remember reading your name at the bottom of it and thinking, boy, I've got to talk to this guy.
Good to know at least there's a handful of people with brains that work still in the world, isn't it? I'm proud to know all of you.
Sometimes they're hard to find.
All right. Take it easy, all.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you.